Welcome everybody to All About Symbian. This is Insight Podcast number 203, recording this on Wednesday the 15th of February 2012, a couple of days before we'd normally do it, but various external factors come into play, and not least the fact that Mr. Ewan Spence is currently on a train somewhere to Social Media Week, I think in London, and various other things. Rafe's heading off somewhere soon. It's all very exciting, leading up to MWC in a couple of weeks' time. Next week's podcast will be Mobile World Congress preview from the All About team. We'll let you know what happens nearer the time. But for now, we do have Mr. Rafe Blanford on the call.
Hello, everybody. And Steve, you make it sound like we're having this podcast when Ewan's on the train, so he can't be here.
No, I'm just pointing out the general level of activity and frenetic running around like headless chickens. We wish Ewan well wherever he is. I'm sure he'll be back on next week. Now, also, we have David Gilson up in Hull.
Yes, hello. And don't worry, I'm not going anywhere and quite happy about it.
Didn't sound like me. Grumpy old man.
Yes,
Now, last week's podcast was our first reaction to the Nokia Bell updates for all our old N8s, E7s, Z601s, etc., etc. It's fair to say that most of them went fairly well, I think. I've been generally pretty pleased with the N8. There are a few glitches, and I don't really want to concentrate on them. I want to concentrate on some of the positives. It does feel a lot more modern, and I haven't had any show-stopping problems whatsoever, Rafe. Now, I'm currently using two home screens, which I'm famous for only ever using one, but I've kind of loving the way you can have single contacts with their own photos on the screen on their own. So I've got basically a social screen with all my most contacted contacts with their thumbnails and a nice pretty background. And then my main home screen then can be things like application shortcuts and like the email widget, which really works very, very well, allowing you to scroll through the email headers. I've got a profile widget to switch profiles and customize the active profile. A few more app shortcuts, plus the single height calendar widget. And basically that does me with the drop down, so I can toggle Bluetooth and toggle Wi-Fi, etc. I'm basically sorted, and I think my N8 is now as complete as it has been for a long, long time. I will come to the glitches in a minute, but let's go around the round table. David, you upgraded just the N8. Last time we came to you, you had it on Bell for 1 hour. You've now had a week and an hour, so how have you got on?
I'm getting more comfortable with it, and I've gone for three home screens. I've got 8 shortcuts for email and calendar widget on my main screen, and then if I go to the left, I've got my music controls, and to the right, I've done like you. I've got a couple of like single contact photos, and then I've got like a carousel of other people with a map shortcut and a little search widget, and it's working very well for me. And it's a thing about Bell that I've kept saying, and I'm going to keep banging on about. I really like how you can change the app menu into an alphabetical list rather than a sort of arcanely structured grid. I think that is a great big fresh of breath air. And I think that the drop down menu from the top is handy just for switching things like Wi-Fi on and off and switching silent on and off. I haven't actually bothered with changing profiles as such. I either want it to ring or I want it to be quiet. So I'm just using the silent button, and that's very handy. And also, I often switch between USB mass storage and PC suite mode. So once I'm connected by USB, there's an option in the window shared menu to do that as well. So yeah, I'm feeling a lot more comfortable with it than I was.
Okay, there's one big thing I raised last week, which is a performance, and I was having problems with the back icon somehow sometimes not responding perfectly. I think I've isolated this down. This happens when you're actually in the middle of an email sync. And it's just chugging away accessing the IMAP server. Just for a few seconds, the processor is completely maxed out and it doesn't respond quite as well as it should do to some of those icons. I suspect that can be fixed in software. It's a shame that they got to this with that slight optimization not being done, but it's certainly not a showstopper. And I only miss one tap in 50 now because I know roughly when to tap and when not to tap. Otherwise, I'm really, really happy with Bell on the N8. Rafe, the two big questions spring to mind in terms of your own updates. You updated, I think, the N8 and the E6. What about performance for you? And also, what about battery life? Because we have had a few criticisms around the net about poorer battery life.
Yes, I mean, I updated the E6. I can't say I've noticed much of an impact on battery life, but then the E6 already lasts a very long time. And so it's very rare for me to ever be in a situation where the battery runs out completely. Yeah. And I haven't sort of been testing it this week, but I'm going to take the E6 off with me to Barcelona. So I'll be giving it a run through its paces then. And it has a pretty hard time of it there because there's emails and tweets and calls going back and forth all the time, and you don't always have a lot of time to be charging devices, especially when you've got multiple devices to charge up and you've only got one socket in your hotel room. Well, that's a completely different topic. I found the performance to be very good. I haven't actually had the same back button issues as you have, Steve. I mean, looking at people's various experiences that they've been commenting on the site and Nokia discussions and elsewhere, it's apparent that some people have had a few issues. I suspect this is probably more edge cases where people have, you know, pushed their device a bit harder and there's various bits sticking around that maybe didn't get removed in the update. And I know you came across this a bit on your N8, Steve, and I think you'll probably talk about this in a bit. But I've been pleasantly surprised with how smoothly everything has worked for me. The only real glitch I've come across, I updated another device and I found that a few more applications than I was expecting did disappear. In one sense, it wasn't a bad thing because quite a few of them I didn't bother putting back again because they were review applications or games that I no longer played with. But I do feel that that possibly could have been improved a little bit. Or as I said on the podcast last week, you know, it could have been communicated a bit more clearly. And that was for applications even installed on the mass memory or the E drive. So I think that was a bit of a shame. Nonetheless, I mean, I've been thoroughly enjoying it. And in terms of home screens, I'm looking at the E6 here, and actually I've got six home screens with various things. Now, this is partly because I've been testing out some new widgets, both the on the Nokia Social 1.5, and we'll talk about later in the podcast, Map Suite 2.0. But I'd actually probably keep most of these widgets in place. I've actually got a fairly minimalist one for the start one, just a clock and four shortcuts. And then, like you, I've been using those oversized contact widgets, and actually I think the reason that appeals so much is because it's rather like the speed dial. People going back to sort of very early Series 60 devices will remember that was actually once quite a prominent application, and it was, you know, you could have thumbnails displayed on the speed dial, and it actually reminds me kind of very much of that. So it's kind of nice to see some features like that, you know, when they get reinvented for the widget age, actually there's no such thing as a new idea. But
yeah, the E6 is interesting, Rafe, because it's got a smaller screen physically. Obviously, you have to have everything has to be slightly larger in terms of software so that it appears the right size to the human eye. And certainly on the E6, I mean, I wouldn't expect to get away with one or two home screens because you've got less space physically for the widgets and the icons and the shortcuts. And I would suspect that you'll settle down on about three or four home screens just for the E6.
Yeah, I think that's probably right. And also, I mean, with the E6, it's going to tend to be a business communication device. So looking at this, my email widget takes up one screen, and then there's a couple of switch widgets. I've got one for Wi-Fi and Bluetooth on here, and that's kind of one home screen, whereas elsewhere you might be able to fit a bit more in. And certainly on the 701, which I've been using as kind of the Bell device for a lot longer, I've settled down to just three home screens. But one thing I should say about the E6 with regard to Bell, as they had with the original Anna release of the E6, I've actually been quite impressed how there has been quite a lot of effort to make sure it works in this screen resolution. And given that it's kind of the odd man out, if you like, I'm very pleased to see that. You know, that goes from the icons, you know, instead of the usual grid, you've got 4x3 icons, but also the font sizes and the actual rendering of the font works well. I suspect you'll probably be complaining about the varying font sizes. That hasn't bothered me so much. And the other thing about the, you know, E6 is actually it does have the D-pad, so that ability to use it as a sort of non-touchscreen device, if you will, for the most part. And I wondered whether Bell might take some of that ability away. And it's one of the things I always loved about the E6, you know, very easy to use one-handed and quite unusual for that kind of QWERTY form factor. But they've done a very good job there as well. You know, you can still use the D-pad for pretty much everything. The one exception to that really is the toolbar that runs along the bottom of the screen. But obviously, running along the bottom of the screen means your thumb is never very far away from it. And so it works very well. So, you know, the E6, I still feel, is a, you know, a very underrated device, particularly in this form factor. I think it has a lot of unique characteristics. And you know, being brought right up to date with Bell, I still think it's a great device for those who want a, you know, a QWERTY keyboard. And there aren't that many smartphones around, you know, that actually have all the features of the E6 plus that QWERTY keyboard form factor. So, you know, it's still a very worthy consideration if you're looking to buy one of these devices.
Yeah, our one listener is at this point jumping up and down, Rafe, because he's saying, why did Rafe mention a Wi-Fi and Bluetooth switch widgets on the home screen when you've got the nice drop-down, you can just flick it off from the new Nokia Bell drop-down?
I know, but there's still something nice about having those widgets on screen. I suspect I've put them there to fill up the space, as awful as it sounds. but actually, on the E6, you know, you've got, I guess... Well, maybe this is just an excuse, but it's just easier to flick up and switch a widget than it is to pull it down. And obviously, it's a one-tap process, whereas with, you know, the widget's notification, right, you do have to pull it down, then press it. But yes, I mean, I guess to each his own, it probably reflects the fact that I'm still not entirely used to using Bell. And the Wi-Fi one in particular, I was actually using to test various functionality of how Wi-Fi worked when you switch your device on and off. I mean, a couple of people actually remarked on this in the comments, is there's kind of less of an ability to switch Wi-Fi scaling mode off. You kind of either switch Wi-Fi on or off. But that is kind of reflected in the fact that with the pull-down widget, you can actually much more quickly get into the, you know, access point where you set a Wi-Fi network as an access point and save it on the phone. So there are some changes that you have to get used to, and I guess for older Symbian users like me, some of the older habits die hard.
Yeah, I'm rather disappointed that the E6 I've got here, which in theory is a SIM-free unit, still hasn't had the Bell update, and there's been various complaints over at Nokia discussions. Apparently my particular product code is being currently approved. Quite by who, seeing as it's a SIM-free device, I do not know, but watch this space, and I'm looking forward to trying that on the E6 here as well. David, you wanted to say something?
Yeah, just a little comment on what Riff was saying earlier on about having lost a lot of apps, and yes, I said last week that had happened to me. However, there is an upside to this, because the firmware lineup has been changed a lot, and there is far, far, far less blurtware. With the N8 now, I was delighted to see the back of the X Factor application, which I really tried to uninstall, but I couldn't. But I did notice that they actually installed F-Secure as well, as was found on the E7. So you may be able to, if you set that up, you may be able to track your device when you lose it.
And I just want to add in a note about product codes there. Although I've been impressed with how many devices have been able to have this Bell update straight away, there are still quite a few that haven't got it. There's actually various places you can look on the Nokia site in order to work out whether it's available for your product code or not, and you get the product code by typing *#0000# into the phone's dialer, and that will bring up the firmware version. You can also see the product code there. It's worth checking that, obviously, to see whether the update is available. It's worth saying it will sometimes still take a little while to come out. Nokia's servers will be doing load balancing and things like that. So don't despair if you don't get it straight away. And obviously, with the operator variants, about half of those have been approved, but there are significant numbers that haven't. So in some cases, a bit of patience is probably still going to be required. There are also some product codes where there may be a wide issue. And as I understand, it only applies to a couple of percent of devices. But we'll make sure there's a link to this in the show notes. But if you go to discussions.nokia.co.uk, there's actually an active discussion going on there about certain product codes. And you can email Nokia to get some details on how you might be able to get an update sorted out. But all in all, I think it's probably fair to say the majority of people who want to get this update have been able to do so, with apologies to those who haven't. I know there's still some in Australia waiting for it, for example.
Yeah. Just looking at the list of glitches, I mean, I addressed quite a few of them in a workarounds article on the site last week, which was pretty popular. But there are still a few there which have to kind of count as a little bug, Rafe. For example, on the E7, the E6, you're typing a text message in landscape mode. You've got the full QWERTY keyboard going on. You're typing away. There's no count of characters left. It's one of the things that just got lost in the Bell update. They forgot to put the SMS count character back in. Do you think that's something they can fix quickly?
I would imagine that's something that can be added in pretty quickly. It's probably a case of an omission rather than a sort of deliberate feature. Yeah. Where you might contrast that to email notifications, which we talked a little bit about in the last podcast. But just to update you on that, that's actually, in one sense, a feature, in the sense that it is deliberately like that, and it's sort of continuing a story that we've had with email notifications really ever since kind of Nokia messaging, and before that sort of Nokia email got introduced, and that was kind of added onto the platform without being integrated properly, and so email notifications kind of went missing at that point and have never really returned in a satisfactory manner. You can, of course, set up an audio alert, and that's actually what I have on my device, but it's especially frustrating on devices that do actually have a notification LED that you can't set it to, you know, alert you about email. And there's obviously a missed opportunity, I think, for putting something in the title bar and obviously in the status sort of drop down as well. I would hope that's something they'd look at fixing. I suspect this will not be in a sort of a minor update for Bell, but we do know that there are other software updates on the way. So it doesn't seem entirely unreasonable that some kind of plugin could be written to get email notifications working properly. The notification LED I probably could just about leave, but if you introduce this lovely new notification drop-down, I really would like to see it there. And kind of at this point in time, it's a real shame because I think it damages the email experience, which otherwise on Bell is actually the best I think it's been on the Symbian devices for quite some time. One great tip that I want to share, actually read this in one of the comments on one of the Bell articles, was when you're looking at email widget, you can actually swipe it from left to right to switch between different accounts. Previously, of course, you had multiple widgets, one for each email account. So that's a big improvement. But it's also performance-wise and the loading of the HTML views and things like that. I think, the email experience has been greatly improved. Just a little frustrating about the email notifications themselves.
Yeah. In terms of other glitches that are presumably being addressed, the flash video and general flash performance, which was particularly erratic in Bell, the Nokia teams are apparently aware of that, and they have found a fix. It's just a matter of now rolling it out and finding a way of approving it and distributing it. So do watch this space for that. Bluetooth volume. Here's a weird one, Rafe. It's got to be a bug, surely. I've got this nice Bluetooth speaker I'm testing for review on this on allaboutsymbian.com. And if I then connect it via Bluetooth to my old N86, for example, I can set it playing gorgeous sound, and I can control the volume from the little volume on my phone. If I then do exactly the same with my N8 running Bell, whatever I do with the volume controls on the phone, the speaker just continues pumping out dire straits at maximum volume. There's nothing I can do to shut it up. Surely this has to be a little bug. And again, that's got to be rolled out fairly quickly because that's going to affect an awful lot of people.
Yes, I mean, I saw you comment on this one. I actually tried it out on a couple of accessories and it was working okay for me. So I suspect this will be dependent on the implementation of Bluetooth in the accessory. This is actually not an uncommon problem when you're working with Bluetooth accessories, especially something like that, which is tending to use something like the audio-visual remote control profile for adjusting volume. It obviously depends on the Bluetooth accessory we're talking about. But yes, I would imagine that's exactly the sort of thing that can't always be picked up in initial testing. But if they can fix it on the phone, they will do. And as you say, on the older devices, it does work. And actually, that's more a reflection that Bluetooth was rock solid on some of the older devices. And yeah. I suspect, you know, I'm not saying less attention has been paid to it, but inevitably, you know, things do change. Another good example of this relating to Bluetooth again is actually to do with external Bluetooth GPSs, which most people don't use now, given that the GPS in the phone is pretty good, but some people still like to when doing car navigation. And actually the older devices are more reliable in terms of the number of chipsets they support, whereas the most recent Symbian devices, and this isn't specific to Bell, actually it's more of a Symbian 3 issue, I believe, now only support the Surf 3 Bluetooth GPS chipsets. Now that is the most common one, and the vast majority of Bluetooth GPSs do use that. But it's kind of an example. Sometimes there is change over time in terms of what's supported or implemented, or I think, to be fair, the robustness of things, and your Bluetooth bug is probably one of those.
Okay. In terms of how people will see any fixes that come forth from Nokia, I'm guessing it will be something in maybe weeks, maybe a month or so in SW update. You'll see something like performance update, and it'll be a couple of megabytes as a patch file, and that will patch the various files in the firmware. I suspect that's how it will be distributed, rather than another huge all signal dancing update. The Bell update itself was enormous. We've accepted that. We've accepted there were some glitches. From now on, hopefully, we'll just see small patches.
Yes, that's right. In terms of actually, one of the things that changed in Bell was a sort of robustness in the delivery of new software updates. And that's partly around the SW update application, obviously some of the underlying things. And yes, future updates should be being delivered through SW update. And obviously, Bell is kind of like a PR 1.0 release, as the old terminology would have it. And there will be a PR 1.1 to fix up some of the bugs. typical experience suggests that can be anything between 4 and 12 weeks behind. I would suspect in this case we'll see something maybe towards the end of March.
Yeah, I'm still waiting for Steve Litchfield PR 1.2 to be rolled out. Still waiting for my own refresh. And let's move on. The Nokia 500, we covered our first reactions to it in last week's podcast. I've now done the full review, and you can read that on the site, about 3,000 words or so. Rafe, what did you make of my review and my verdict? Do you think I got the conclusion about right?
Yes, I think you got the conclusion about right. I would probably be a bit more forgiving on the Nokia 500. I mean, pretty much everyone says about it, it feels a bit underpowered, it's not quite there. But you basically said this in your summary, it's not for power users, and really any power user looking at it is immediately going to pick up the wrong idea. You know, people who get this device, you know, you can say that it's not enough of a smartphone if they kind of increase their usage, but the sort of people buying this device probably aren't thinking of the future and aren't likely to suddenly have a massive leap in their smartphone use. And the reasons around all these restrictions are basically to do with the amount of free RAM, and that does restrict some of what you can do in terms of multitasking. But for the vast majority of people who would be thinking about buying this handset, I really don't see that as an issue, particularly once you're on the kind of the more stable software release for the Nokia 500. And obviously with Bell coming out, I think that will help enormously with this particular handset as well. One thing that caught my attention in your review is actually how good the camera was. In terms of still pictures, kind of something I'd slightly unexpected on a device that is this cheap, especially when you consider something like the Nokia 700 is significantly more expensive and essentially has the same performance, or at least in theory, because we think they're the same camera module.
Yeah.
Okay, the video performance was very poor, but what do you expect on a device at this price point? But yes, people should go and read it, even if they're maybe not the sort of person that buys a 500. Just try and sit back and think, if I was someone who was looking for a really budget smartphone, would this device appeal to me?
Yeah, it's not so much I think that the 500 has a particularly good camera. It's got a pretty standard, pretty decent Nokia EDOF camera, extended depth of field camera. The problem was that the 700 basically made a complete mess of it. I can only think it's software problems, and I would, if people out there have got a Nokia 700, I'd be fascinated to find out how good or bad your photos are and whether any software updates by Nokia have managed to improve the camera performance, because that really is the odd one out. Every other EDOF camera, right from Rafe, the E52 and E55, 2 years ago, they were producing pretty stellar photographs, even though they had a tiny camera, because extended depth of field basically does work quite well in good light.
Yeah, I can imagine there's rotten fruit being thrown at the podcast right now by some of our listeners who don't quite understand our obsession with EDOF cameras. But I'll say what I've said before about EDOF. Yes, power users probably cringe and go, I don't like it. But for people who just want to take a quick picture, which is what they're doing with their camera phone, you know, just grabbing a quick memory, you really can't beat it, because it's much more difficult to screw up an EDOF photo than it is on a standard autofocus camera. And frankly, on devices in this range, you will produce better results. And for me, that's the important thing. I don't really care about the slightly artificial nature in something and you can't do macro or whatever. The average person will get much better shots with an EDOF camera.
Yeah, and you can't argue with my sample photos during the review. And that wasn't me taking 100 photographs and picking the four best ones. Those were the only four photographs I took on the Nokia 500. Those were the four. And as you can see, they came out brilliantly first time. And it was nice and sunny. There was lots of snow around, very picturesque. David, you saw my sample photographs of the Nokia 500, and you've seen the EDOF images I've produced over the last year or two. Where do you stand on EDOF and extended depth of field?
I'm not as forgiving of it as you two are. But I think when you're taking photos, I think they're great for taking photos for Facebook or putting on in Flickr maybe or in a review. They produce fine photos. So there is that standpoint of people just want to take quick snaps. Although I think also in EDOF's defense, there are also autofocus camera phones that are as bad as EDOF. Although my problem with EDOF tends to be like when I get it to sort of like a 1-to-1 ratio on the screen and I can see lots of processing artifacts and it all just doesn't look quite so sharp. That's when it falls down for me.
Yeah, the moment you admit a need to blow up photos, 8-megapixel photos to 1-to-1 pixel ratio on your large monitor, that's the point where you really should have a better camera or in your phone, for example, in an 8. And I know you've got the N8 as well, David, so I guess you're comparing with the very best here. Let's move on, actually. If you say, do read the 500 review if you take an interest in the device and the sheer range of what Symbian's on these days, from £100 phones right up to 450, I think it makes a very interesting device. Tintin, David. Now, how is it possible that a Java game can be much, much better than an HD Symbian native game totaling 1 gigabyte? How is that possible?
Well, it all comes down to the well-known knowledge, really, that graphics alone do not make great gameplay. For those who are wondering what we're talking about, I reviewed the super-duper 3D graphics only available on the Nokia 700 and other newer devices, Tintin HD game. And the way the game works, it takes you by the hand through the steps of a film, the recent film with Daniel Craig, etc. in. And it's very good 3D graphics, although people in the comments have said it's not as good as the iPhone, so we'll just put that off of the record. But a lot of the gameplay, there's no exploration, there's no open-ended gameplay. There's lots of puzzle solving, but even that, you're kind of like almost told where to tap on the screen to solve puzzles. So you do spend a lot of the time, even when you're allegedly playing the game, you do spend a lot of time sat watching it. So it is more like watching a slightly interactive movie. Whereas the 2D Java-based version of Tintin and the Adventures of the Voyage of a Unicorn, or whatever it's called, it's a 2D scrolling platform game. But it requires a lot more of you. You're much more engaged and you can have much more fun with it. So it's just a question of gameplay.
Yeah, I have to say my favourite Symbian games tend to be ones that are fairly fast and fluid in the sense that there aren't big cutscenes, there aren't big introductory videos to wade through. I mean, I quite like the Real Golf HD, I think it was called, Real Golf 2011 HD, which had lovely little video animations and cutscenes and 3D flybys. But it also had about a 20-second wait between holes while all the different graphics loaded. And I've just killed the experience. If it had, say, a 2-second wait, it would have been quite a nice game. But at the end of the day, that just made it a slow game. Some of my all-time favorite games on Symbian are still Micropool and Mau Mau, for example. I know Rafe would probably like that one, based on Uno. And they load almost instantly. They play instantly. There's never a dull moment. And that's what a good game needs, certainly for a casual game, I think. Rafe, was I right there? Have you ever tried Mau Mau?
Yes, it's a great game, and I can definitely recommend people check it out. I mean, I think this comes down to the style of gameplay as well. I think all of us are probably casual gamers, especially on mobile devices. And I know a lot of people fall into that profile as well, in which case the idea of kind of bite-sized gameplay and quick loading is important because you're tending to grab and play for a few minutes at a time. I mean, obviously, with things like the iPhone, the iPad, I think there's been a kind of tendency to see a mobile gaming move more towards console-like or at least, you know, handheld gaming, where quite often the games are a lot more immersive, they're a lot deeper, sure, if you like, and you know you have to put more time into them to get something out, and obviously I think people who like those games tend to be quite voluble about them. You know, that's kind of the gaming hardcore, if you like. And you know, yes, I think that's very important. I still think casual gaming is probably the most important constituent on mobile, just because it's made up of more people. And it also, of course, comes down to the Symbian hardware. You know, we all know that the Symbian hardware in raw specification terms is less than what's on Android and iOS, and so it's not able to run those kind of heavy in-depth graphic games in quite the same way. And you know, that's reflected in the comment David said earlier, not as good as X, Y, and Z. Yeah. I mean, I'm a big believer for games that actually gameplay is the most important thing, and graphics should serve to support that and not really the other way around. I suspect that would probably be somewhat controversial if we got any really strong gamers listening to this. So I do think those casual games are more suited to Symbian devices, which is one of the reasons we probably all prefer them. That said, you know, if you pick up one of the great iPad or iPhone games, of which there are many, and obviously, you know, the likes of EA and a lot of big gaming companies have been investing massive amounts of money, and there's this idea, our console's going to disappear and all that. We won't get into that now, but it's kind of what gaming experience suits the device and the person in question. At least that's how I see it.
Yeah, I love the recent Arctica software titles I've been reviewing on the site. They're just so professional, and the graphics are just so, so fast. David?
Yeah, I was just going to say, I mean, Ray was saying about immersive experiences. Well, there's a couple of what I would say stellar 3D immersive adventure games on Symbian and other platforms, as Dungeon Hunter 2 HD and Crusade of Destiny. Now, these are sort of sword and sorcery 3D run around, and in a sense, the graphics are the same sort of quality as Tintin HD, but the gameplay's there. You can just jump into the game. It, even though they are massive downloads, they load quickly enough, and you can just run around and explore, and for however long you've got, you can just run around, battered dragon on the head, and go and explore a cave. Yeah, as you do. But say with Tintin, you're just sat there like watching puzzles, and even if you kind of get killed and have to start over again, you can't just like walk across and take shortcuts of a puzzle you're working on. You have to go through every video over and over again.
Yeah, yeah. Let's move on. We've just got time for one more item before we close this podcast. Now, Rafe, I've been a big fan of Nokia Maps over the years. 3.6, I think, was my all-time favorite. It was everything was under one icon, and you knew where everything was. It just had everything you need and nothing more. Then we had Maps 3.8, which introduced, you know, extra modules and extra icons, and it split the functionality on screen. And we've now got the latest Nokia Maps Suite 2. Please persuade me. Persuade me that I need to invest in this download and this install.
Well, it is a beta, so you always need to be cautious about such things. But I was actually a fan when it kind of separated into the separate application that Steve's referring to there. I thought that made a lot of sense because it became more task-orientated. You know, you went into the application that suited you at the time. I mean, sure, having everything under a single icon, if you're very familiar with the way it works, makes a lot of sense. But for novice users, I think it's probably a more complicated way to do it on mobile. And I think people know I'm actually a fan of the kind of idea that you should have, you know, an experience-led on mobile rather than application or silo-led kind of experience. But 3.8, yep, this is effectively 3.9, although it's called Maps Suite 2.0. You've got various applications. You've got Maps and Drive, with Drive obviously being the car navigation component, and Maps being effectively the mapping plus the walking or how you find places. And those are the two kind of cornerstones of the application. The Drive is as good as ever. It's actually been improved in this version in that you've got a slightly more screen estate used for the on-screen map. So I actually was trying this out the other day. I didn't have too much of a problem with how it was before, but yes, it's a slightly better design. They've been tweaking the on-screen design of this application through all the versions. And I think on the whole, it's probably improved as it goes. Nokia Maps actually has sort of a slightly more interesting update for me. At least it's added a photo layer, just as you have a kind of a 3D view, landmarks and transit lines on the map. You can now add photos, and this actually picks up photos that are stored on the device and have been geotagged, and now most Symbian 3 devices will do that by default. And so you can see the map, the pictures that you've taken on the map, and it's kind of finally a sensible use for geotagged photos actually on the phone itself. Previously, you know, you really had to upload to a service like Flickr or any of the other photo sharing services to see them arrayed on a map. So this is quite a nice way. You know, you can go back and see the map, the photos you've taken in a particular area. I thought it's quite effective, and actually I was surprisingly pleased with the performance. You know, there's still a way to go that, I mean, I'd like to be able to jump into the photos and do things with them, but you know, a nice little feature add. But actually the more significant one for me was the addition of voice search. This is actually only available on UK SIM cards. Fortunately, we have those, so we're able to test this out, and it worked really, really well. It was able to, you know, recognize some quite obscure place names and also pick up local business names. So I was able to talk to it about my local pub. It picked that up no problem. But also some peculiar British place names, again, it had no problem. It's actually powered by Nuance's technology, and it's just a case you press the microphone button on the search screen, say something, and within a second or two, you get the results back. You know, the usual applies when we're talking about voice input into smartphones, but it does make sense in a mapping program, particularly if you're in a car and you want to do something hands-free. It's a lot easier to speak in a place rather than having to type it in. And the Nokia implementation, certainly as good as I've seen anywhere in terms of picking up the right place name and then one tap to start you on the drive mode. So it works really well. Outside of the kind of the main application, they've actually added a couple of home screen widgets, one of which is the My or Nearby Places, which sort of shows you where you are, but actually it's the main purpose is to show you nearby attractions, businesses, and so forth. And it's kind of got a scrollable list that you can go through and then bring up information about those places, you know, jump into more information, share it with a friend, kind of as you'd expect. For me, the more useful one is actually the My Location widget, which, as you'd expect, shows you a mini-map on your home screen of where you are, but allows you to send a text message to someone to sort of send them your location. And that's the kind of thing I've done on a fairly frequent basis, but previously had to dive into the application to go and do it. So I can see myself using that quite a bit, especially when you're trying to meet up with friends. Obviously, it helps if they've got a Nokia device that can sort of interpret it at the other end, and I haven't really tried it the other way around. From what I can see, it's sending a link to the Nokia Maps, the web version. So possibly room for some improvement there. Other than that, you've got improvements to the public transport module. This is absolutely fantastic if you use public transport on a regular basis. It covers more than 200 cities now, but you're trying to find the right bus route, or the, especially if you're in a strange city and you, the right tube route can be impossible. This application serves you very well. It's got all the routes kind of programmed in, and for about 40 of the cities it's got the timing stuff as well, so you can see when your next bus or next tube is going to take place. There's a few updates to the weather application as well. It now supports landscape mode. I'd love to see a weather widget added to this sort of maps suite.
But, seconded, seconded.
And I had a quick look on the Nokia Beta Labs forum, and to my pleasant surprise, that's actually coming in a future version, so watch out for that one. All in all, this is actually a pretty massive update. Most of it really is about smoothing out some rough edges, but I've probably touched on a few of the new features, all of which I think make sense and just add to my feeling that this is probably the premier mapping and location suite of applications available on any mobile device. And the fact it's available for free is quite frankly amazing. You know, it now does the kind of the multimodal transport that I've talked about in the past. You know, you can walk or plot a route that uses public transport and walking. Great to finally see that come in. It does the car navigation, it does places, so it can act as a guide when you're in a strange city. It does weather, and really it's gone from strength to strength, and I think it's one of those applications you look at and say, this is why I keep using my Symbian device, because if you compare the Nokia Maps and Drive experience on Windows Phone, for example, it's nowhere near as comprehensive in terms of functionality. I'm sure it will come in time, but it's hard to beat that kind of Symbian location experience, particularly when you've got the great GPS and battery life on those Symbian devices. So you can do, you know, 3 or 4 hours in the city navigation, no problem. In a car, the GPS does tend to wear down the battery a bit faster. But as I say, it's a really, really impressive experience. And I think people rather take it for granted.
Yeah, it's fair to say that Google Maps navigation on Android is also coming on at a pace. I personally would still rate Ovi Maps or Nokia Maps ahead of it overall, and I've certainly found it much more pleasant to use, and the voice is certainly much more pleasing to the ear rather than the Google Maps rather robotic drone. But I do accept the fact that Google has got massive resources in terms of access to databases and access to point of interest lookups. So certainly plenty of competition for Nokia in this field. And that's obviously why it stays free, because Android's own navigation is free. And my mind was rather blown, Rafe, by you saying you talked to the Map Suite 2 about your local pub. I just picked you saying, yes, the ambience is rather nice. It's got a lovely, lovely roaring fire. And I do like the people down there. I'm just wondering what it's saying back to you.
Well, it said, do you fancy a pint?
And the answer is usually yes. We're right out of time, guys. Thank you very much for listening. That's a goodbye down in Sussex.
Goodbye, everybody. Thanks for listening.
And a goodbye up in Hull.
Goodbye, everybody. Talk to you next time.
I'm Steve Litchfield. Thank you for listening. Catch you next week when we'll be talking about Mobile World Congress and what we might or might not be seeing. Bye-bye for now.